John Hervey Wheeler is not among the most well-known civil rights leaders in America, but his impact in the movement, especially here in North Carolina, cannot be denied. Wheeler moved to Durham in 1929, just before the Great Depression, rose through the ranks to become the president of Mechanics and Farmers Bank, one of the largest black banks in the country. In a new book, historian Brandon Winford spotlights the life of John Hervey Wheeler, who promoted economic equality for African Americans. Brandon, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us who John Hervey Wheeler. Tell us who he was, where he came from.
So, by the 1960s, John Hervey Wheeler is North Carolina's most influential black power broker. He was a banker and civil rights lawyer, president, as you mentioned, of the Mechanics Farmers Bank based here in Durham. Also chairman of the Durham Committee on Negro Affairs, now the Durham Committee on the Affairs of Black People, from 1957 to 1978. He's also a civil rights lawyer, one of the first law graduates at North Carolina Central University in 1947. But in so many ways, John Hervey Wheeler was a Renaissance man. He was a statesman. He was an educator. He was an avid tennis player. He was an accomplished violinist. He was a husband. He was a father. He was also born, I like to say, into black business. His father was an executive with the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. His mother and father were educators. They taught at Kittrell College in Vance County from about 1898 to 1908. The family comes to Durham in around 1908, in July 1908, a month before the Mechanics and Farmers Bank opens. John Hervey Wheeler is born the same year as the Mechanics and Farmers Bank opens. And so in many ways, they are infants together, and they become adults in many ways together. The family ultimately moves to Atlanta, Georgia in 1912. John Hervey Wheeler takes up the position as supervisor for the North Carolina Mutual's Atlanta offices. He eventually becomes supervisor over the entire state. It becomes an executive with the North Carolina Mutual Life Insurance Company. And so John Hervey Wheeler and his sisters, he had an older sister, Ruth Hervey Wheeler, younger sister, Marjorie Janice Wheeler. They come of age in Jim Crow Atlanta, Georgia, attended Atlanta public schools up through seventh grade, could not go to public schools beyond seventh grade because Atlanta didn't have any opportunities educationally for African-Americans. It wasn't until 1924 that the city built Booker T. Washington High School. And so from there, those families who could afford to send their children to school beyond seventh grade attended the city's historically black colleges. And so John Hervey Wheeler attended Morehouse College as a high school student, and then he continued on at Morehouse College as a college student. And in many ways, his parents were civic leaders, and so he gets some of his civic responsibility to the community, his commitment from his parents. But he also sort of developed his worldviews at Morehouse College. He's in Morehouse during the 1920s, the height of the New Negro Movement and the Harlem Renaissance. Is also the height of student rebellions on college campuses throughout the country. And so he writes for the student newspaper, the Maroon Tiger. He is a part of the orchestra and glee club. He's a violinist. And he also writes decisive articles related to the poetry, County Cullen, Langston Hughes during the 1920s. And he comes to Durham in 1929, right, a few months before the stock market crash in 1929. Interesting time to become a banker, given the coming of the Great Depression. He comes to North Carolina as a bank teller, making $60 a month for the Mechanics and Farmers Bank. And it's there in Durham in 1930s that he sort of emerges as, and at that time, he's sort of a banker, a businessman in training. I like to call him a business activist in training during the 1930s.
But let's talk about these two cities that are critical to his formation, Atlanta and then Durham, where Mechanics and Farmers Bank exists.
Right.
I mean, these are two cities where, even though Jim Crow is the law of the land, without a doubt, segregation and discrimination are absolutely fundamental to both and all of the Southern social architecture. There are arteries of capital working through black communities
right.
in those two cities. There is a Mechanics and Farmers Bank. How
right.
unique was that, a black-owned bank in the South in 1929?
So a really good question. So the historian Julia E.K. Walker calls the period between 1900 and 1930 the golden age of black business. Between 1888 and about 1930, there were over 134 black-owned banks in the United States. The majority of them operated in the South. And so it wasn't uncommon to have black business and black banks operating and functioning alongside banks like the Mechanics and Farmers Bank. By 1910, there are about 53 or so black-owned banks that are operating in the South. In Atlanta, we have the Citizens Trust Bank. In places like Richmond, Virginia, you have the St. Luke Penny Savings Bank. In 1910, Virginia has about 11 black-owned banks. Mississippi has about, or Virginia has 14. Mississippi has about 11 black-owned banks. North Carolina has about 6 black-owned banks in 1910. And so it's very common to have these kinds of institutions.
So we hear about him as a banker and a businessman, and he's very successful, and it's in an environment where he can thrive in a city like Durham. And again, and this is a period where it's better for at least African-American right. business in the South. But we've also heard lots of stories about business communities, particularly black business communities, wanting to take a step back when it came to the actual civil rights fight. They didn't want to be seen as actively engaged in that fight, keep a little distance. First of all, is that a fair characterization in general? And where was Wheeler in all this?
Well, I would say that it's not entirely a fair characterization of those black businesses. When we look at black business in particular, black capitalism, there always is this sense, this sort of duality, right? On the one hand, these banks and everything they represent for African Americans are about responsibility to community. On the other hand, they're businesses. And so they're also thinking about their profitability, their bottom line. And so the challenge is, how do you balance all of that? And I think companies like the North Carolina Mutual, the Mechanics Farmers Bank, are able to balance that responsibility to community. Now, one of the interesting things, when we look at this period between 1930 and the Great Depression, one of the things that black business people like Booker T. Washington, advocated was that you're going through this period of Reconstruction, a reversal, this nadir, reversal in all of those full citizenship rights. And Booker T. Washington was making the case that African Americans had to ground themselves in economic independence, this idea of economic uplift, as a pathway to citizenship. In other words, he advocated, let's put aside political participation for the moment, grow our businesses and things along those lines, and money, right, the economic power would make it possible for you to gain social, political, and economic citizenship rights. And so this period, and we have all these examples of businesses thriving in black communities across the country.
And it's not just, but not just income, but wealth, owning things.
Right.
We have to be able to own things.
Right, yeah. Right. Have to have some ownership. Yeah. Right. Ownership was a pathway to citizenship, but also decision making. But you get to the Great Depression, for a lot of African Americans, they were still second-class citizens.
So we're talking about John Hervey Wheeler here, his banking at Mechanics and Farmers Bank in Durham. But also he becomes plays a key role in, at that time, Durham's Committee on the Affairs of what is now of black people. Talk about his involvement in civil rights organizations.
Right. So he was, from the very beginning of the Durham Committee's founding in 1935, John Wheeler was a part of that organization. During the 1930s, he's kind of an activist in training in a lot of ways, right? He doesn't have leadership roles in that organization. But it's really during World War II that he becomes chairman of the committee's education committee, which is the committee that really spearheads the legal efforts to take on the Durham School Board by 1949 in the 1951 case Blue v. Durham. He's also, as you can imagine, was a part of the NAACP, involved in so many organizations. He's a member of the Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. He's also a member of the boards of trustees at both Atlanta University and Morehouse College. He has his hands in so many different areas and issues related to African-American life throughout the South. And the most important thing to remember about John or Hervey Wheeler from that standpoint is he believed in people and institutions. And in many ways, a part of his criticism is that he was beholden to institutions, right? He believed in organized pressure. He believed in legal tactics. And he believed that people need to get out the vote. Also very influential within the North Carolina State Democratic Party. He was the first African-American president of the Southern Regional Council, which is this interracial civil rights organization that spearheads the voter education project leading to the Civil Rights, Voting Rights Act of 1965. And so he leads that organization, a national organization, from 1964 to 1969. He is very much one of the most prominent civil rights figures in North Carolina, certainly, but he was among the national civil rights leaders in the country. And a lot of people don't realize that or know that about him because he operated in many ways behind the scenes. You don't hear a lot about him because of that.
But he also did take leadership roles. And I guess one of the other things, his belief in these institutions was, in a sense, why he had such great faith in what becomes the paradox of integration, which is that black businesses don't thrive, although he thought they would.
Right. Yeah. Part of he's an integrationist in terms of how he articulated black citizenship rights. But he also felt that integration had to be worked out properly. In other words, he did not envision African-American institutions falling by the wayside, businesses, schools falling by the wayside with the coming of integration. He felt like during segregation, although many people feel like black business people did not support the civil rights movement, were not supportive of integration because it would hurt their businesses, John Wheeler is advocating integration precisely because he thought that the Mechanics and Farmers Bank would be better off. Black institutions would be better off. He believed that the Mechanics and Farmers Bank could compete with a white bank of comparable size if given access to the larger marketplace.
Right.
He believed black institutions, in terms of their integrity, their excellence, could compete if given equal opportunities. And he really pushed that idea. It was very upfront about this idea that black institutions would be a part of American society, not integrated into a society and abandoned. And in many instances, we look at the example of schools, those institutions were abandoned.
Schools, redlining, all of the other things that
exactly
didn't go along with it that then ended up hobbling these businesses,
exactly,
which if they had not been in place, we would have had a different landscape. Brandon, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for
Thank
being
you
with
so
us.
Much. Glad to have the opportunity.
Brandon Winford is assistant professor of history at the University of Tennessee. He's going to be giving talks about his book, John Hervey Wheeler, Black Banking and the Economic Struggle for Civil Rights. Tonight, 6 o'clock, the Museum of Durham History. Next Monday, Duke Law at 12:30. And, of course, we've got it all at our website, stateofthings.org.